and welcome back to We the People, your favorite weekly Nintendo podcast. My name is Mike Cottrell. I'm joined here by my twin brother, Player 2 since the womb. Say hello, Matthew.
Yo.
We are here to discuss the latest Nintendo happenings, as we always do here on whatever podcast service you choose. We're on the Spotify's, we're on the Apple Podcasts, and now we are cutting videos on YouTube with some kind of vaguely related background gameplay in video form. If that's your thing, go check that out. Or if you want to see the show kind of broken into separate segments, the highlights channel on YouTube is great for you. But let's get into the show, Matthew. The Nintendo Switch parentheses OLED model end parentheses has been officially announced. Something that Nintendo just did with a random Twitter post, as they do, and we have it revealed the Switch Pro that people have been talking about for months, the upscaled 4K, the better graphics, none of that. To go over what the OLED model is, just briefly, so everybody has some context for our conversation. The OLED screen is just a higher quality screen than the glossy one that was in there in the regular Switch and the Switch Lite. It's going to give you like a bit more of a vivid image when you're playing in handheld mode. They also reduce the size of the bezel, so the screen size is effectively bigger, making it a 7-inch screen. You get a few inches. You've got a few fractions of an inch. It's not a huge difference. You've got a better stand, which is cool. I like that's the Switch's versatility was always something that I liked. And so you've got a wider stand that has multiple angles. And you know, if you're listening to the podcast version, you're trying to get like a visual in your head, just think of a Microsoft Surface tablet. It looks just like that. They've also got an improved dock, where they've got a LAN port built in, so you've got one USB, one power, and one LAN. The dock seems to light up on the front and say Nintendo Switch, which is cute, but otherwise no extra functionality. And then to round it out, we've got doubled internal storage, so you got 64 gigs of storage on your Switch, and then you've got some form of an enhanced audio, but without having it on hand, we don't really know what that means. But it will be better than the current Switch. Releases October 8th for $350, an extra 50 buckaroons on top of the Switch that you already probably know and love. And it'll release alongside Metroid Dread, which might actually help that out. But we'll get into all that. Matthew, what's your initial reaction to the OLED model?
I was never one of those people that was clamoring for a 4K Switch, a Switch Pro, whatever all the rumors suggested. I always thought it would be a bad idea. I just am never of the mindset of, hey, let's introduce something else into the market when we already have a product that's doing extremely well. It's always been you and I's argument against why Mario Kart 9 will never be a game for the Nintendo Switch, because Mario Kart 8 Deluxe is just selling too good, and it's why would you want to introduce a game that all of a sudden now there's no real reason to buy that one anymore? And I think that would have been the case if they had released some upgraded Switch where all of a sudden everybody wants that now instead of the Switch that's already on pace to be the best-selling console of all time. So I did not understand that. In another vein, though, this is the most Nintendo thing I think I've ever seen, and that's saying a lot. Just that, you know, all these rumors, 4K, you know, 1080p, all these different things, and, you know, what you get is an OLED screen and a wider stand. I just, with the same, you know, Joy-Con controllers that are notorious for not working, so I wasn't surprised at all. I actually think it's really funny, though, and the great thing I think we can take away from this is that, once again, a lot of these insiders, quote-unquote, are completely wrong, and, you know, that's something that makes me pretty happy. Is I love, you know, when, you know, you're able to stick it to those guys, but
I wonder if Nintendo's getting better at finding them and feeding them bad information, or whatever. Because yeah, this is there's been kind of a string of things that people have been wrong about. I mean, I don't think anyone called out Kazuya being the Smash character, but we've heard about Sora being in talks. We've heard about like all this stuff, and I just wonder if they're getting better at you know, keeping their information safe. But yeah, I was like you. I was tired about hearing the Switch Pro after the first time I heard about it. And after that point, I was like, please just let me go on with my life. I'm sure at some point Nintendo will release a better product, but you know, I'm honestly mostly happy with my Switch. Now, would I like, you know, the sort of upscaled, it's not like true 4K resolution that the new Tegra chips are capable of, but it would kind of like smartly upscale them, kind of like when we do our playthroughs on older consoles with the M Classic. I recently posted a Mario Party 4 on our TikTok, Catrillo Games on TikTok, if you're wondering, and people were wondering if I was running it through Dolphin or something, and I was like, no, just a Weed HDMI cable, a cheap one, honestly, and then the M Classic upscales it, and you get a pretty nice image out of that. That would have been cool to get for docked mode, because so many games really struggle with resolution, and then there's a bunch of other games that struggle with loading. And so something similar to the new 3DS, where certain games would run a little bit better, would have been nice. You know, for context, I think the easiest example is that on the 3DS, Super Smash Brothers would that initial loading screen that where the game needs to initialize all its data, that takes probably like 30 seconds to a minute on a regular 3DS, and it's like half the time on the new 3DS. Some improvements like that would have been fine, but you know, I think the way that everybody's looking at this is misinformed. They're looking at it like it's a PlayStation 4 Pro or an upgraded Xbox or something like that, when they're thinking about the Nintendo Switch wrong. The Nintendo Switch, in my eyes, is a handheld system that docks into a TV, not a console that you take on the go. And that frame of mind, that small distinction, is kind of important when you look at what Nintendo's doing with you know, the selection of games that they're bringing to the table. You look at their marketing, and you know, the docked version of the Switch is often coming in like halfway through the trailer. It's always about that portable experience, because right now no one's competing with them on that angle. Smartphones and tablets do, but they honestly kind of serve a different vertical than what the Nintendo Switch is going for. And so thinking about it in that frame of reference, we can look back to like, oh, this is just what Nintendo does all the time. You go from Game Boy to Game Boy Pocket, and then Game Boy Color adds some color, and that was like a little bit of a distinction. But you know, you look at the Advance generation, you had the Game Boy Advance, the Game Boy Advance SP, and then you had the Micro. You look at the DS and the 3DS, and they started to get crazy with it. You know, you had the regular DS, then the DS Lite, and then you had a DSi, and then you had the regular 3DS to the 3DS XL to the 2DS to the 2DS wedge shaped one. And you've got all these different options that just kind of takes the same concept, puts it in a different shape and size. And honestly, I think it's about keeping momentum alive in the mobile or the handheld lineup, because they've always done this. And so looking at it in that frame of reference, it's like, oh yeah, of course they didn't like do any major improvements. This is just one of those like, you know, cute little like additions to the lineup that doesn't really add or detract anything. I mean, in some sense, I'm kind of happy because I don't have to spend a bunch of money. I don't feel like I'm missing out on this new experience. And so, yeah, I'm feeling pretty neutral on this. I think also, you know, the leaks played a big part in people's expectations being shattered. And I find that really funny, because everybody was so convinced, all the insider boys. Welcome back to the bottom, boys, where we've got no special information. Yeah, come play, I mean, with us in the mud.
Well, it's more so the arrogance that a lot of those people, you know, walk around with, as far as, you know, I know information that you don't, and just to see them proven completely wrong again, you know, that's why before E3, there was that guy, Vergebin, or I don't know how you say his name. I've heard Vergebin. I don't know. But he had a bunch of predictions going into E3 that were all completely wrong, aside from Metroid. And, you know, that was just nice to see because, you know, he's one of those guys that I think a lot of people give way too much credit to. And that's how a lot of those people are, is they've gotten a few things right and then they've gotten a million things wrong. And so it's always funny to see it come full circle. But yeah, this Switch model, though, I mean, like, I get that perspective. And, you know, it's probably the fake rumors that had people expecting something great. I just, to me, I personally just don't understand the point of, you know, releasing a new version of a system that you're really just getting an OLED screen and a slightly better sound and a wider dock or a wider, you know, thing that holds it up, a wider stand. I don't know. I just find it a little
pointless. It would make sense to me if they replaced the regular Switch model with this one, but with it being at a $350 price tag, I mean, that's getting into dangerous territory where $50 more and you've got a PlayStation 4 or a PlayStation 5 digital edition. And so I think that, you know, it's in one sense, they're just running the same playbook that they've always run, where, like, you know, you have a Game Boy Advance, then they release the SP. Some small percentage of people are going to double dip and get that next one. Other people are excited about the new products, and so maybe they didn't jump in with the Game Boy Advance. They're going to jump in with the SP and get the cool one before anybody else does. Like, I think it just kind of brings that momentum in there. But yeah, the Switch, and so, like, and now we've got, like, kind of a Switch lineup that really looks like something that Apple would do, where they've got the, you know, the sort of, like, cheap, fun option that's really colorful, then they've got the standard, and then they've got the Max, and just like Apple, they're coming up with a lot of dumb names for it, you know? It's, like, my wife was shopping for iPhones recently, and we're like, all right, so there's the iPhone 12, then the 12 mini, then the 12 Pro Max. Like, Pro Max? Who comes up? You pay people millions of dollars to come up with that stuff? My boy. And then, you know, this is similarly, like, Switch Lite, I get that, even though it doesn't switch, and I still have a problem with that. You know, the whole the whole concept of the system doesn't work. But for this one to be called the Nintendo Switch parentheses OLED model is a little weird. And it's definitely interesting because they're still leaving that gap open where they're, if they called the Switch Pro, that would have been the funniest thing. I would have been cracking up, but they didn't call it Switch Pro. And so we're still not free. We're still going to hear about it every other week. The Switch Pro is still being developed. Which, yeah, I'm sure something will come out eventually, but it's like, at that point, if you're really going to, like, go for 4K, is that just the Switch 2? You know, I don't know. And honestly, like, I don't care. Like, there's nothing Nintendo's going to do that's going to have them catch up to Microsoft or Sony. Like, there's literally nothing. And, you know, you look back to through history, and they do not care to be on the cutting edge technology. They cared with the GameCube, and it didn't serve them particularly well. They cared with the 64, and they still got clobbered by PlayStation. And so I just don't think that they care to do that. They want to play it safer and go for the more profitable option. And it's like, you know, for a portable system, it's still fine for the most part. You just, some of these games should be, you know, really, really, like, Age of Calamity is kind of insane that Nintendo put that out, even though they're kind of just publishing it and they're not making it. It's crazy that they'd let a game run at, like, 15 frames per second and be like, yep, that's good, $60.
Yeah, no, I completely agree, but, you know, I mean, I don't know. Yeah, I mean, I don't know what to say about Age of Calamity, but, you know, I feel like maybe their impression on that is that it's coming from another studio technically, so they're like, eh, it's not really us per se, but yeah, but no, I mean, this announcement, though, I mean, I just didn't really have an opinion on it. I saw it and, you know, it was just very lackluster. I was just like, okay, I mean, you know, I guess it's cool for anybody that wants it. I can't really imagine anybody wanting to spend $50 more just to get an OLED screen and the stuff that you get with it, even though it's not much more money. I just think, I don't know. I just don't really.
That
totally
part is
see
a little bit confusing for me as well. Yeah, because like you come in with the expectation of like you probably get lured in by the $250 price tag on the Switch Lite, and then you see the regular Switch at $300 and, you know, this one for $50 extra. I don't know. If I was buying a Switch today and I didn't have one, I would go for the OLED model. The other use case is like there's so many households with multiple Switches, and it's starting to get to the point where I wonder if I should get, you know, just like decommission my Switch and have that available for the kids because they keep breaking all my Joy-Cons. And I can, upgrade to a Switch. I was thinking if the Switch Pro rumors really were true, that's what I was going to do. The OLED model, not really compelling enough for me to want to do that yet. But yeah, you know, they always try to get like a little bit of icing on top. And, we'll see how it goes. I'm sure it'll sell fine. I mean, you know, it's just, again, like Nintendo's done this a million times with the handheld space. They're entirely dominating the handheld space. With literally no competition. They've got a monopoly on handheld gaming outside of like mobile games, and like they're going to continue to have that, and so this is just icing on that cake. Let's address this thing that's coming out real quick. So Digital Foundry has revealed that the dev kit Switch has moved from being a 6 gigabyte unit to an 8 gigabyte unit, speaking in terms of RAM. The retail units of the Nintendo Switch, as well as the OLED Switch, will always be 4 gigabytes of RAM until, like, you know, something major happens. But some people are speculating, like, oh, now that, like, this is the Switch Pro. This is, like, what they're getting ready for. And there's an interesting video done by MVG on YouTube, who has actually developed a few Switch games, where he kind of dispels that rumor, saying that like there's not really a case in like game dev history where like that's hinted at something different. Typically in dev kits, you will get more RAM than the retail model in order to run your debug software on top of the game running at 100%. So that's probably just something that developers asked for in the future to get more RAM on the dev kits, and Nintendo did that. Nothing really to see there. It could mean eventually we'll get Switches with more RAM, but probably not.
Yeah, I just don't, again, I just always question the, you know, and not to say, you know, Nintendo's allergic to bad business decisions, because they're not in any way, shape, or form. They've made a lot of them, but I just don't understand why you would want to release another Switch when the Switch you're already selling, you're already making, is selling insanely well. I just don't understand, like, those things just, to me, they don't make sense. As much as people want them to improve the games they're playing on or to get better Switch games in the future, I get all that, but from a business standpoint, it literally makes zero sense. And again, it's the same thing we said, why Mario Kart 9 will not be a Switch game, and I would be willing to put money on that, unless it's at the end of the Switch's lifespan or something like that, but I just think they probably look at a game like Mario Kart 9, I bet you that game's done, you know, and they look at it as, whenever we come out with the new system, we'll have this puppy ready to go, and it can be a launch title to help us get off to a good start with whatever console we make next. You know, and I really believe that, because, you know, I would get it if it was the Wii U and they looked at it and said, you know what, we need to do something fast. We need to make some sort of upgrade or new system. And that's what they did with coming out with the Switch, because the Wii U wasn't selling well. But the Switch is selling insanely well, and there's no dip in that. It still continues to sell really well. So I just, there's no logic behind that idea that, like, yeah, man, a 4K Switch, as much as everybody wants it, you know, I just think that'll probably be whatever system they make next when they move on from the Switch.
Yeah. Well, and that's going to be the interesting thing to see, is that I think we're getting some form of, like, Switch 2 or, like, whatever next console Nintendo makes, they're going to do this whole concept again. they're going to run it into the ground. Like, is this whole portable gaming that you can dock into your TV, like, it works. And it works well for the Japanese audience at home, works well abroad. Like, I think, you know, I don't know if we'll see a Switch Pro necessarily. I think we might just see a Switch 2 where they make, like, a clean break and a distinction of just, like, all right, here's where all the new games are. But that's probably a few years off, at the very least. Because if Nintendo were to make a 4K-capable handheld at this point, it would cost too much next to those juggernaut consoles that that Sony and Xbox put out. Like, it would be... It doesn't have that nice, convenient advantage of like, being effectively $200 cheaper than either one. Like, and Nintendo probably wants to stick in that price range they have for a very, very long time. And so I don't think we're going to get a substantial Switch improvement or a Switch sequel for probably the next 2 years at least. But I don't know, we'll see. I mean, you know, I am starting to see some of the some of the like strings behind the puppets, where, you know, you boot up Mario Golf Super Rush and you see the game just like really struggling to render everything using that dynamic resolution to keep the game running, and that stuff is a struggle for sure. And it's starting to get old, and they're only going to get less third-party support as they go. But I think we've still got probably a couple years until we see something really substantial. But that's our take on it. Any last words, Matthew?
No, I think we've, you know, covered every aspect of that.
We've beaten that horse more than the Miitopia advertisements. All right, let's move on to our next subject here. We've got Mario Golf Super Rush is out. We've played it. I mean, you know, at this point, you've probably seen reviews for it if you're interested, but we'll just give our brief take on how we feel about the game and what we've experienced so far and all that stuff. Matthew, what do you think about that Mario Golf Super Rush?
I think it's a pretty fun game. I mean, as a sports fan, and I do like golf as well as other sports like basketball, football, tennis, but you know, golf is something I'm really interested in as well, and I think they do a pretty good job of emulating that, so to speak, or emulating the experience of playing golf. It's funny, I find the traditional golf with no special shots or anything like that a lot more fun than the speed golf or the battle golf. Maybe just because I'm a purist. I mean, even in Mario Tennis, I always like just the regular tennis mode, better than all the wacky stuff like flying all over the court and doing, you know, special abilities and stuff like that. But no, I find it pretty fun. There's some things about it that kind of frustrate me, you know, from playing some of the later courses in the game. There's a lot of hazards, so to speak, that I kind of wish you could turn those off. Like, I'll never forget when I was playing on one of the newer levels that I unlocked, there's some bridge, and I'm thinking, clearly, the game understands that, like, that's just there for scenery. There's no way you can hit that. And not only do I hit the bridge, it bounces up there and gets, like, stuck on top of the bridge. And I'm like, this is the most ridiculous thing, you know? There's certain things like that that kind of frustrated me about it. Also, the element of RNG, you know, when I used to think when you, do your meter for how long you want to hit the ball that, timing it right makes some sort of difference. But once you, if you let that meter go too full, there's an element of RNG where, you know, you can shank the shot to the left or the right. And that's something I'm not really a big fan of, just because from what I understand from golf, you know, putting more power behind your shot is not going to make you more or less accurate, you know, at least for like PGA Tour players. I'm sure for, you know, Joe Schmoes that would make a difference, but at least for people who play golf, I don't believe that makes any difference, you know. If anything, it seems like more people are more inaccurate as opposed to driving, doing like, you know, hitting wedges and, you know, putting, things like that. So I find that part to be a little odd. I don't really understand the point of it. I think it should just be based on how well you time it, you know. But overall, it's a pretty fun game. You know, I think the speed golf is probably the most disappointing mode to me, because I think that's the thing we were all interested in the most that looked goofy and fun. But I think there's a lot of issues with it that make it less fun. Like, for example, the timer that you have, like if you performed on the previous hole the best, you have to wait longer than everyone else. And that trickles down from second and third place, you know, which means that most holes, it just, you end up alternating. Whoever came in last the previous time usually comes in first or second, and vice versa. And I feel like it creates these situations where you're not really competing with each other half the time once you understand the game and how to get down to your ball the fastest, or as fast as possible. I feel like as we played that more, there was a lot of non-competing, so to speak, or we weren't really interacting with each other. So I didn't really love that mode. I thought the battle golf was a lot of fun. You know, I kind of, or I'm trying to remember if I had a problem with the fact that the holes disappear after you get them. Not really. I mean, I just, I don't know. That's kind of just some wacky mode. I don't really know what to say about it. It's just kind of fun. You know, it's goofy. It's chaotic. Sometimes it's a little frustrating with the putting on that one, I feel like, because even when you pay attention to the grid and you look at the terrain, it's hard to get a good feel for those hills on that mode because they're not natural hills. They're like tile floors, and so it's a little weird. But yeah, I mean, those are basically my thoughts on it, though, is that it, you know, it's a pretty fun game. It's odd to me that it's been getting some bad reviews because I don't feel that it's a bad game. I just don't think it's a phenomenal game either. I think it's held back by some, you know, flaws here and there, but, you know, what game isn't? So, but no, I've had a lot of fun with it so far.
Yeah, that's kind of my take on it. I think it's perfectly serviceable. It's fun. It's a good game, but, you know, definitely something that I think works best if you've got a bunch of other friends that have it, or if you just want to like dip your toes in to rent it. I would agree that the big problem with speed golf is that timer that that you have, where like it didn't seem like we were interacting as much as we otherwise would have liked to. So I don't know. It's like you could, if you could just play with the rules in speed golf, you could make it really, really fun. You know, if you could just adjust that timer, like maybe instead of like a 30-second penalty, you take a 5-second penalty if you won the last hole. And then the scoring system was also weird, where it emphasized, it tries to balance, like it wants you to get to the hole quickly, but also do it without too many strokes. And instead of like building up a collection of time or of a stroke points at the end of each hole, you're given, you know, 1 to 4 points based on which place you came in on that hole. And I think if you could just play with those options, like I think we would like something where it balanced your time with your stroke count, and then like added all that up at the end. You know, there's a lot of room there for a lot of like fun different ways to experience that, but with the current rule set, it's just kind of, you know, it's a little bland. Battle golf was much more of a delightful surprise. It takes everything that speed golf does and just forces interaction. The holes disappear as you put the balls in, and so you might, you know, one time Trevor was trying to get a hole, and then I sent my special attack there, which shocked him and blew his ball away, and I was able to steal it. And that mode is just a lot of fun. I like the hazards and all that stuff. I wonder if we haven't unlocked other stages for it yet, but it seems like there's only two stages that work for it. And that's one of my biggest gripes of the game in general. There's this fear with a lot of Nintendo games. It's like, oh, we don't have enough content, so we gotta like, you know, tease it out so that you have to like earn every level. And all we had unlocked when the game came out, we've got 4 people ready to play. We're all excited, ready to dive in, and we've only got 2 different courses to go through. And it's just like, come on, guys, come on. Most people playing these games aren't like, all right, we're gonna meet up 5 days after this game comes out, and we're gonna, like, you know, I'm gonna play it alone first and unlock all my stuff, and then we'll play multiplayer. It's so strange because that keeps happening every time we get boot up a Nintendo game. I remember the same thing with Super Smash Bros, where it's like, you know, oh, let's try and unlock 60 characters. When we're trying to, like, unbox the game and have a fun night, the first night we have it, you know, they release these games on Fridays. It's like, what? I don't really get that aspect. So I've been playing through story mode to try and unlock everything. And story mode is fine. It's nothing special. I think it's a great way to learn the mechanics of the game, because otherwise they can appear pretty confusing. But I like the aspect of, like, leveling up a Mii and training him. Although I get Matthew's hesitancy with that because he doesn't want to play a Mii character for, you know, the duration of the story mode, which I'd have to agree with. But I do like the throwback to the old Game Boy Mario Golfs, where you would do a similar type of story mode with everything. And like, it's fine. It's not something that I'm, like, itching to get back to. I haven't beaten it quite yet, but I plan to. But yeah, I mean, it's Mario Golf is a fairly solid game that I think, you know, just has that sequel problem of being compared to everything that came before it. I think what a lot of people seem to be comparing it unfavorably on Twitter is to the animations, which I will say the animations are pretty bland. They're doing that thing that they do in every Mario game now, where they're sucking all of the life and excitement out of it and making it, like, brand safe and very sanitized. And, like, you know, that's what we get nowadays. We can't get Mario doing something funny because that might be outside of the brand for him. You know, we can't get anybody out of their corporate approved outfits and all that stuff. And, you know, I think it's a little bit of a victim of that, but yeah, I don't know. I think it's definitely worth at least renting to jump into speed golf is a lot of fun. Battle golf is even more fun. And I'm interested in experiencing the rest of the courses, but you know, while they have, like, all these different types of courses and the wind will always be different, it seems like most courses you're just kind of, like, hitting the ball twice and then putting it. And I'd like to see a little more variety in that too. And there's something you do in story mode. I don't know if there's a multiplayer option for this, but it's called cross country golf. And you, so imagine, you know, that battle golf concept, but in a full course where there's, like, you know, I was having to, like, hit the ball up a mountain and then, get it in that hole and then move to other ones. So based on, like, which order you tackle the holes in, you might do better or worse based on what you choose. And I wonder if that one's multiplayer. That would also be pretty fun. But I like the free roaming mechanics and some of that stuff. And it's fun. It's all right. It's all right.
Yeah.
But yeah. All right. That's Mario Golf. Let's take a brief moment here to talk about Kazuya. I found out it's Kazuya, not Kazuya, which ruins my Banjo and Kazuya joke. But have you played Smash at all with him?
No, I still haven't actually updated my game. There's some replays I've been trying to get off that I haven't gotten around to yet. And
okay, so I will tackle this piece. I spent way more time than I usually spend in training mode for Smash, trying to learn all the different inputs for Kazuya. I find him a lot easier to handle than the Street Fighter characters, because the most complicated thing that he does is, like, a Shoryuken type of input. And he's a lot of fun. I like the way that they implemented him from the Tekken series. I like the different camera angles that they do when you do throws. And like, you know, it's pretty fun. I played a few rounds with Trevor that you can see on Cotrello Plays, and he's definitely an interesting character. He's kind of shaking up the conversation as all the DLC characters do, because people are pulling off these nasty zero to death combos and posting them online. He's got a lot of interesting tools where he can get invincibility frames while he skids across the floor, and that links into either a combo starter or a kill move. So he's definitely going to be a force to be reckoned with, although Ryu could do similar things in Smash 4 and didn't ever, you know, become the menace that people thought he was. So I think this is probably going to be one of those niche high-tier picks that people pull out, and you know, there will be a couple of people who are really, really professional with him, but he's got the weakness that every character that doesn't have lots of projectiles or a sword has, which they're weak to projectiles and swords. Even though he can reflect projectiles with his kick, it's not really like as practical as, say, like Fox's reflector. And then to do these nasty combos, he needs to get in very, very, very close and be in the right position. And so, even to where like some stages don't just kind of like interfere with his combos, or you have to make these adjustments. And in addition to that, he doesn't have the greatest recovery in the world. And even though his projectile looks very good, it's incredibly slow and doesn't hit all the time. So I don't think that's going to like protect him as much from characters with swords, but definitely like a very interesting pick for the next DLC installment. Not what I was expecting or wishing for, but now that I've got him in my hands, he's pretty fun to play. Have you seen some of the Twitter combos people have been posting, Matthew?
No, I haven't really seen anything on the character in general. You know, I've mentioned it before, but Smash is something that's just been kind of off my radar for quite some time now, where I just haven't had much of a personal interest in it, just based on, you know, the DLC choices they've been going with. You know, really, this whole second fighter pass to me has been abysmal, like, for me anyway, and so I just, I haven't paid much attention to it. But no, I've seen probably one or two things, but I couldn't tell you much about the character at all, to be honest.
Yeah. And it comes with some spirit battles, or about what you expect. One of the most fun experiences I had with this DLC, though, is that there is something in the patch that he came with that increased the difficulty of level 9 comms. And because Kazuya has all these wacky tools that, like, in the right hands could be very devastating, I had a lot of fun trying to beat the level 9 one. It took a good few tries as well. There's I put on our TikTok him doing it, like a 0 to 100 combo on my K Rule, and then when I come back to try and land a hit on him, he uses the invincibility frames and uppercuts me and KOs me like 0 to death by a level 9 computer. That's insane. Like, I've played through the entire World of Light thing on the hardest difficulty twice, it's kind of a fun challenge. Once I used a character with a sword, I dealt with him pretty handily, but I had a lot of fun doing that, and it's like become this side game to it, and I hope they do some more stuff like that and really like embrace it. Like when Sephiroth came out, they had this challenge where you'd do like a one stock match with him, and I was just like, let me see how fast I can beat it. I ended up beating it in like 5 seconds. I hope they do more stuff like that in the future, because for a lot of these characters, when they come, they try to make them like very different and appealing, and like, oh my gosh, it's just like Tekken, or it's just like Street Fighter or whatever. And I would never pick up Terry or Kazuya enough to like be good with them. I'm just not interested. I don't, you know, if I wanted to play fighting games that had complex inputs, I would go play, you know, any of the 500 other fighting games that that cut themselves on that. So they're not really for me. And you know, similarly with someone like Steve or Min Min, you have to like reorient the whole way you think about Smash to get good with them. And so I hope that in the future, or you know, in the next Smash game, they really think about that, of just like creating like challenges and other content around these fighters, other than just like getting the character. Because yeah, for someone like you, man, this fighter pass is a big ripoff. You haven't gotten anything that you wanted. You won't play any any of those characters for any extended period of time, and they're just like kind of there. But if they had like cool little challenges that came with it, I think that'd be cooler.
Yeah, no, I agree. I just, you know, it's one of those things that at this point, instead of complaining about it, I just, you know, I've found other games to play or other things to do with my time, you know, and that's kind of the way I look at it, you know, as if they want to keep, you know, going in one direction or what feels like one direction only, you know, I'm just not really going to, you know, give my time to the game like that, you know, not as like a, you know, I'll show you game, you know, but I just, you know, like I said, there's just been like a lack of interest there. And that's why I'm hoping for this last character. It's somebody that is not like 90% of what we've already gotten. So, but I wouldn't be surprised at this point.
Yeah. And I think we'll have to do that on our sister podcast, Cotrillo Talks. Is I was thinking one time we predict who the last character is going to be, and I think that should be a fun discussion to have another day. But yeah, I personally I agree with that sentiment. I feel like the, you know, you look at the front of the box of like Smash 64 and the roster that they had there, and you look at the roster now, and it's just like you'll go hours online without matching with someone who isn't like a, you know, young adult anime styled character. And you know, I'll just go like entire sessions where I'll play online and I just won't see any of the characters that Smash has traditionally been famous for. And so I think they're losing the thread a little bit with like the type of characters that you should put in a game like this. But, you know, at the same time, you know, for people who are into like, you know, Tekken and RPG games, like for that demographic that they're really serving of like the young adult, the young Japanese adult, like, I mean, they're having a heyday, man. This is the best thing that ever happened to them. So like,
yeah, I just can't imagine that. I don't know. I just feel like, you know, diversity is a big thing. And, you know, we talk about that just in all walks of life, how important diversity is. And I feel like with Smash, they don't care about that at all. And I find it to be very bizarre, especially in this day and age when, like I said, obviously video game characters aren't something that's important. But, you know, I feel like in any sort of entertainment, we want to be inclusive to all types of different people. And I feel like they've really only been serving that Japanese fan base, that very niche fan base, you know, and you can tell because I remember, you know, when people thought Joker was a big character, and I think you were the one who told me that, or I may have told you that Gex has sold, or yeah, the Gex franchise, three games, has completely outsold the entire Persona franchise. And it's like, Gex hasn't been around for over 20 years, you know, and I think that's the most laughable thing to me, that we, you know, kid ourselves into thinking some of these characters and these franchises are big deals because Sakurai chose to put them in Smash, when really they're in Smash because he's a fan of them. And the whole, it's Nintendo, that's a bunch of nonsense. You know, like, I'm sorry, Nintendo from a business standpoint is not going to be like, yeah, put Joker in or put Terry in. Like, it just literally does nothing for them. On top of the fact that you're like including these no-name characters that are not going to move Fighter Pass units, you know, because I just think, man, imagine if that first Fighter Pass, your first character is Crash or Master Chief or something like that. Like, that's an instant buy from almost everybody who has that game. I really believe that. And so, I don't know. I just think, hopefully with this last character, they do something that's even slightly different. But, like I said, I'm not holding my breath. You know, I feel like the only out there characters we've gotten so far are Banjo and Steve, and literally everybody else, they look like they could probably be from the same game, same universe. It, you know, we've talked about you could take Min Min out of that, but even then, I think she blends in well enough. You know, it's really just her wacky arms that differentiate her, but otherwise she looks just like all those other characters. So,
yeah, I mean, it's... And to clarify, like that's the Persona. There's a difference between the Shin Megami Tensei that Gex is outsold, and Persona 5 has sold almost 5 million collectively. Like, it's approaching that, so it'll probably break 5 million before it's done.
But that's what I meant. Shin Megami Tensei.
Yeah, and Persona is like kind of like a a riff on that. It's a spinoff that's become bigger than the original series that spawned it. And like, to be fair, Persona 5 is a big game, but like, also to be fair, it doesn't serve Nintendo at all because they're not bringing that game to Switch. Maybe they will in like another 2 years, but yeah, that's where it's like, you know, for anybody outside of that what seems to be the target demographic of like teen to young adult in Japan, yeah, there really hasn't been much for you outside of Steve and Banjo. I mean, maybe you were into ARMS, but you know, probably not. The game only sold like 2 million copies. It's like, like I think Three Houses beat ARMS, which is you know, very sad for ARMS, and it probably won't ever get a sequel. But yeah, I mean, because I mean, you know, $3 million for Nintendo is not all that special. $3 million for like Persona 5 is like, oh my gosh, we've never seen this much success in the series. So you gotta, you know, put things in context.
I don't know I was just looking at Persona sales, and it says Persona 5 is the top selling mainline release with 500,000 total sales, not 5 million.
So it's sold, so Persona 5 Royal, which is like the deluxe version of it, has shipped over 1.8 million. The original Persona 5 sold more than 3.2 million units. So it's like,
I don't know what you're reading then, because I literally see 518,000 total sales for Persona 5.
Which source are you at?
I'm just on a website, personacentral.com. I don't know.
Yeah, this is the information is coming from.
Sold 13.1 million games and products worldwide. That's not that much. Like for an entire franchise, I don't know. I'm pretty sure Gex has sold more than that. More than 13, I believe it has.
I don't know. We'd have to check the Gex numbers. What I'm talking about is coming from Atlas financial releases. And so yeah, I mean, but yeah, put all together, like Persona 5 is like way bigger than anything they've done beforehand. Like nothing, they had Persona 4 was pretty big on the Vita, but it was on the Vita. And so,
yeah, Gex has sold over 15 million as a series. So
yeah, so well,
put Gex in there, Smash. There we at go. That point, like, man, that's what I mean is I'm just like, it's not to say anything about Persona or any, like, I don't care if a game series doesn't sell that well. There's plenty of great games that haven't sold that well. You know, Metroid Prime's a trilogy that, you know, has only sold 6 million collectively, which is not that much, but they're still incredible games. I don't think that's the end all be all, but I just think, you know, when we, you know, as the Smash team goes out of their way to put these characters in, when there's just clear slam dunk choices that you could pick that would make everybody happy, and you're just like, nah, man, I'd rather put in a character that I like. I just find that to be so bizarre.
Yeah, well, not to mention they just could have put in, you know, they could have just put in, like, another. If Sega was getting another pick, it's like, you know, I feel like if Sega was making that choice, they would have been like, oh, we think Persona is going to become, like, a marginally important series for us. Like, no, they'd probably put Robotnik or Shadow or Tails in. It's like, you know, and that would have been way bigger, especially Robotnik. That would have been hype. But
I completely agree.
That's what's funny, and I don't know. I, to a certain extent, it's weird because like it in Smash 4 DLC, we got Ryu and Cloud. I mean, it doesn't get much bigger than that, but. But, you know, in between that, like some no-name characters like Roy and Corrin. So I don't know, dude. Time will tell if we ever get the information on how people were picked for Smash. But, like, you know, it's definitely confusing, especially when you start with that one. Like, start with someone like Banjo, who's like, if you want more characters like Banjo. But I don't know, maybe they were afraid of, like, people being angry if they started with Banjo and then came out with a bunch of anime characters. They wanted to like set expectations. So like, no, this is the anime pass.
I mean, they're all, I mean, like I said, besides Steve and Banjo, it's been the anime DLC. I don't know, man. I just feel like it, as game developers too, it's really doing a really big disservice. I feel like, because it's almost like they want to make the game they've always wanted as opposed to what what your customers want. And I find that to be just so strange. You know, like, I'm a huge DK fan. It doesn't mean I'm going to put in, like, 9 Donkey Kong characters. Like, I just think that's... I always say that. Like, I think there's a certain point of that you reach of absurdity that just, you know, is like, are we really going to do this? Are we really just going to, you know, keep doing it the way that we want to do it as opposed to the way that, you know, financially makes the most sense? And I don't know. I think Nintendo has this level of trust in Sakurai, obviously, where they think he knows best. And I think he looks at it as that it's going to be successful anyway. But, you know, again, I think the original point, though, is I've said this a million times just with Nintendo in general, but it always seems like they're so hell-bent on catering to the Japanese audience, which is fine, but I just think, you know, you're catering to, out of the 3 major territories, the least profitable one. And sometimes I just wonder, man, if they took the Sony route and they were more interested in appealing to the West, how much bigger they would be. And not to say that that means you have to abandon, like, as a creator, you should do things that you're interested in, you know, for the most part. But I just think I always just wonder that, you know, if Nintendo had a more mainstream Western appeal, if they would be a much bigger deal than they are now. And I feel like back in the day, they kind of used to have that approach, and that's why Nintendo became a big deal. You know, when you look at their most successful games and kind of the approach they took, it wasn't like it is now, where it seems like everything's so anime, sword-based, set in medieval times, and you have mana, and you take turns, and, you know, and Smash is just riddled with that now, you know, and even if they're not all RPG characters, you know, again, it's that anime-style, you know, character. But anyway, I'm not trying to ramble or go on a tangent, but, you know, that's just something I always ponder is, you know, how different things might be. And, you know, I just hope this Fighter Pass, they look at it as, like, let's just do something a little different. But it I swear, if it's another character that's just like everybody else in that pass, I will probably call Nintendo and ask for my money back. I know I won't get it, but it will be, it's more about sending a message, you know. It's not about the money, it's about sending a message.
Yeah, I mean, it's any argument of like, oh, Shovel Knight can't get in or Sans can't be in because indie games are small. It's like, dude, there's a man. The Shovel Knight has outsold the majority of the Fire Emblem franchise, and Undertale probably has as well. So if we're putting, you know, get Roy out of the game, switch him for Sans or Shovel Knight, just like there's all the. It's weird how people think that, like, you know, the indie characters are too small, but like Terry's big enough. It's like, it's not, it's, you look at like the, where people are actually throwing down their cash, and it's like not even a contest with the popularity of some of these characters comparatively. But, you know, that's, we don't pick the Smash characters, so it's going to be what it's going to be. And for the last character, I my expectations are through the floor. I just, like, I'm expecting Ryu Hayabusa, probably. Or something that, like, something of that vein that's like, ah, cool. Let's move on with that. Got into another Smash rabbit hole. Let's move on to this little rumor here that Donkey Kong is getting an animated movie or some sort of animated project. Don't know if it's a movie or a TV show in the works. And I'm trying to find the source of the rumor right now. It's our old friend Zippo. So I mean, you know, who knows? Who knows if that's real or it's not? But it makes sense to me. What do you think, Matthew?
Well, I don't know why anybody's listening to that guy again, just like Vergebin or whatever his name is, because he's somebody else, too, that's gotten some things wrong. And, you know, he was also one of the people that was saying DK at E3 was most... He didn't confirm it 100%, but said very, very, very likely. And, you know, I think this makes a lot of sense, and I wouldn't be surprised if he's right about it, but I just I find it funny, you know, just as a quick aside, you know, we were talking about a lot of these leakers getting exposed, that they'll just keep doing business as usual. They won't, like, address the fact that they got some things wrong. They'll just go to the next leak, and everybody is just like, yeah, yeah, no, that, yeah, totally, man. I find it so bizarre. But anyway, I think this does make a lot of sense. I don't know what, in the form of what, but that's why I find it weird that we haven't gotten any sort of DK announcement, but there's all these plans that they have for it that I'm just wondering, you know, when are we going to hear about any of these, you know, plans or ideas that they have? Because E3 would have been a great opportunity to do that, you know, and I think it would have been great to start with the game and then, you know, imagine if we had gotten the game announced at E3 and then you move on to DK's 40th anniversary, which is today, and then you use that as a direct to talk about more about the new game. You use it to talk about the Universal Studios park that's opening, this animated movie or TV show or short that's coming, you know, and I don't know. It just seems like it makes a ton of sense. But, you know, that's why now and now, especially because we're recording this on DK's 40th anniversary, there's no announcement that's happened or recognition of that. I don't think we're hearing anything about DK until next E3, which really, really, really bums me out as a fan, because I'm just ready to hear anything about the franchise at this point. And, you know, it seems like we're going to be waiting a good while longer, you know, because I just, unless this game's coming out this year and they just want to wait until, because I think they usually do a direct in August or September. But I just feel like, I don't know, I can't imagine the game coming out this year when, you know, they would have had a perfect opportunity to announce it at E3. I just think that wouldn't make any sense. And, yeah, so again, this animated idea, it sounds like it makes a lot of sense. We already had a Donkey Kong Country TV show, which, you know, for all its issues and, you know, whatnot, I remember it being a thing that people liked back when it came out. Now it kind of lives on through meme culture, but I remember at the time too, it was pretty beloved, and I know we always enjoyed watching it. And so, I, you know, that's one of the main reasons it's not surprising to me at all, is we've already had a Donkey Kong show, you know, so doing this again, you know, with their plans to make the franchise big again, makes complete sense.
Yeah, yeah, that's where, you know, and let me read straight from Zippo's blog what he says. And like, yeah, to be fair, my guy here was, he's been right about some stuff, wrong about a lot of stuff, and he, you know, he was saying that a Fire Emblem remake and Donkey Kong were the games that were missing from the presentation that he had heard about, which, just to briefly address Fire Emblem, like, I don't know about a remake. People are like, oh yeah, of course a Fire Emblem remake. Man, the one with Alm sold like trash, and it was an awesome game. It didn't deserve that treatment, but it got it, so I'd be surprised if they were doing the remake thing again. In any case, back to a big franchise. Donkey Kong, like, here's what he says, that, he says, quote, I've been told by multiple people that Donkey Kong is the next franchise in line to follow Mario and Nintendo's push for game franchises to become multimedia juggernauts, end quote. This is what your boy's been saying on We the People for a long time. You know, if you want to go back and listen to the old episodes, I don't know the timestamps, but like, I've been saying this forever, and for a leaker or an insider to take a guess at this, man, this is the safest guess you could go out with. Like, of course this is the next big multimedia Nintendo franchise. No one else has the chops. Zelda almost does. Animal Crossing, it's getting there. Animal Crossing and Zelda, maybe Splatoon are all the franchises that you could see this sort of jump happening, but nothing's bigger than Donkey Kong. And it's so funny because every, you know, people come out of the woodwork and talk about how unpopular Donkey Kong is. Like, no, dude, Nintendo has the numbers, dude. They know how the merchandise sells. They know how the games sell. They just haven't really kept the gas on the games, which I think is a big mistake after Rare left. But like, had that not happened, Donkey Kong would be the number two franchise. No doubt in my mind. And of course, I'm excluding Pokemon because, you know, Nintendo doesn't completely own that. But like, for like Mario, Zelda, you know, yada yada, Donkey Kong would be number two if they kept doing that. And honestly, it could be. It could get back to that place. But, you know, only time will tell in that case. So it's like, are they making a movie? Probably. Or a TV show, like they're probably going to do extra stuff with Donkey Kong. Like, it's a lot of investment to license your character to a theme park. And, you know, I almost wonder if when Nintendo was talking to Universal about doing this, if they might have preferred it be like a Mario / Zelda thing. They were like, no, we want Donkey Kong. Because they have to come to an agreement where Universal like wants that it's expensive real estate for these theme parks to have these attractions, and they're not going to just put anything out there. You know, they're not going to put a Xenoblade attraction.
Yeah.
I was just imagining that in my head. There's like three people there. I got the power of the Monado.
It's a Monado.
Like, of course it's Donkey Kong. So yeah, it's like, I think this is this a leak? I don't know. Is it happening regardless of whether this guy has inside information? Probably. And yeah, the Donkey Kong TV show was definitely interesting for its time. I think they spent all their money on making the TV show look cool, and it's aged very strangely, where it's like, does it look bad? Yes, but also no. It's just like taking this on this new thing where it's so absurd and strange, especially when you compare it to the games, that it's become like its own thing entirely. And I liken it to the other Nintendo shows where they're just so weird that you want to watch them. There's a Mario episode where they did a parody of the story of Moses leading the Jews out of Egypt and splitting the seas. There is a Mario episode that has that. There is a real life Mario segment where they have OJ they have Magic Johnson. That would have been weirder, but they have Magic Johnson on there. Is, hey, it's Magic Johnson. And the Donkey Kong show is so strange, to the badonkadonk that Donkey Kong has in the show, to the dancing segments, like why they thought that it should be a musical. It's so weird. But yeah, I think that there's probably some interest in doing this. Either they cut a deal with something like Netflix to do a TV series, or I think, you know, if we're talking about, you know, what Nintendo's done in the past, they're probably just working out a deal with Illumination. And again, like this, all the pieces add up. You don't have to be an insider to like read the room. You just have to, you know, keep your eyes open. Nintendo forms a major partnership with Universal to do this theme park. And they're also doing a movie deal with Illumination, who's, you know, same parent company and everything. Chris Meledandri, I'm probably butchering his name, but the head of Illumination, joins Nintendo's board of directors. And we have some other animated project in the works. Like, just do the math. It's probably a Donkey Kong thing, because Universal's doing partially a Donkey Kong theme park. So, I mean, it might be... Now, that doesn't settle the debate on whether it's a movie or not, but... But I would lean toward movie. DreamWorks does make TV shows, but they seem to be mostly focused on the feature length side of things.
Yeah, most definitely. But that's why if feature length, I can't imagine a feature length DK thing, you know, being that they, unless they make them talk like they did in the original show, but. I don't know, that idea still sounds so funny to me, even though it's been done before with musicals,
yeah,
and everything.
I'm
like that.
I'm equally confused about how they're going to do Mario, because I feel like Nintendo's going to be like, no, Mario can't talk. He can only say,
Wahoo, Mario, Wahoo, Yahoo, Mario, Mario, Wahoo, Wahoo, Mario.
Because they don't let him talk in any games. They have this thing where they're like obsessed with Mario being like brand safe and so you only can say tiny little phrases, and it'll be interesting. I'm very interested to see how the Illumination movie turns out, because they've made some really cool stuff before. and they've made a bunch of stinkers. And so, you know, it'll be interesting to see where this lands in it. But yeah, I can't imagine what they would do for a Donkey Kong plot either. But, you know, that's people are getting paid very good money to figure that out right now. So we'll see. Only time will tell, I think. But yeah, Donkey Kong is definitely like that's going to be the next series that you see getting Lego sets and all stuff, all that. And like, I am here for it. I need to like start a savings account for like all, like, you know, because I've dipped my toe in some of this Mario stuff. I bought my son the Lego Mario set. It's fun. I've got him all the Mario Kart toys. But when the Donkey Kong thing comes out, my boy, like, I'm gonna have to buy everything.
Ugh, yeah, it's only right.
Yeah, we gotta start making like lots of money before that. It's coming. I've also started getting back into collecting Pokemon cards. My boy, it's not looking good. But all right, well, in the spirit of today, which as of recording is Donkey Kong's 40th anniversary, I thought it'd be appropriate to just take a moment to reflect on our memories of the franchise, what it's meant to us, our favorite couple of games in the franchise, an organic discussion, but one that that I think is cool. So, Matthew, what are you thinking about today on Donkey Kong's 40th birthday?
Man, it's a special day, Michael. It's a special day. This is when the inception of my favorite game character came about, and I don't know. I mean, obviously, arcade Donkey Kong is not really what I'm personally a fan of, or that Donkey Kong. You and I have always debated about that. I really feel like Donkey Kong became what it was when Donkey Kong Country was started, because I think everything was just taken in a completely otherworldly direction almost. You know, because they're almost unrecognizable as far as like the arcade DK games and you know, the Donkey Kong Country games, which obviously Donkey Kong Country is like my favorite, you know, franchise, my favorite characters. You know, DK is my favorite character, obviously, but yeah, it's just it's special, man. You know, it's a shame that there's no announcement or anything happening to coincide this. You know, or it doesn't appear to anyway. It would have been nice to hear something at E3 because of that. But, you know, and it's nice seeing, I'm looking at Twitter right now, and it's really, it makes me happy as a longtime fan to see the outpouring support that people have and the love that they have for the characters and the series. And, you know, it seems like it's, I don't know. It's just nice to see that, because sometimes you feel like DK kind of gets lost in the shuffle, or people don't really talk about it as much anymore because they don't make as many games. And, you know, it just shows you the staying power that it has, and how, you know, if they were to do something with it, which it sounds like they are, I really think it'll end up being really successful again, like it usually has been. But it's funny because Nintendo keeps tweeting about stupid things like, here's an item notification in Skyward Sword, and everybody just keeps spamming the replies with DK and, like, you know, acknowledge his birthday. But there is one they post about Monster Hunter, and literally every reply is like pictures of Donkey Kong and, you know, things being said about Donkey Kong. So that's just really cool to see as a fan. But yeah, the franchise means everything to me as far as gaming. You know, I don't think I'd be a game fan if it wasn't for the original Donkey Kong Country, and those games are honestly, you know, as I've gotten older and as I've, you know, like, there's more to life obviously than video games, even though I love them. But it's funny because all I really care about at this point in my life is like new DK game announcements. I don't know why, but it's just, there's nothing else that really gets me that excited. That's why sometimes I come out of these Nintendo Directs and I'm so utterly disappointed. Sometimes I realize I'm like, well, you know, if they had done something different, like a new IP or bring back something old like Star Fox or F-Zero, that'd be really awesome too. But there's always this void of like, man, like, I just want DK to come back, you know, like, I just feel like it's been way too long, and it really bums me out whenever he's not there. And so any presentation that doesn't have DK, I find myself being really bummed because it just means a lot to me. And those are really the games I look forward to playing now, you know, as Donkey Kong games. And, you know, even though there's obviously other great games, you know, Super Mario Odyssey came out in 2017. That's one of the most fun games I've ever experienced. But, you know, again, there's just this ape-sized hole in my heart that's, you know, I don't know. But yeah, it means everything to me as far as, you know, my love for video games, my admiration for games, you know, all comes from the Big Ape himself. So
yeah, it was one of our starting points in games. Our first system that we ever had any interaction with, to the best of my memory, was the Super Nintendo. I know that from photos I've seen that we played Mario Kart, which I think came out before, but the first game that we ever played through and saw through to the end was Donkey Kong Country on ye old Super Nintendo. And we bought all three games on the Super Nintendo and beat all of them. And yeah, it's always been like one of my top three game franchises. But you know, it just had this this strange absence for like a decade plus that has really kind of put a damper on what's going on. Because there were a lot of like those 90s franchises that are still going strong today. I mean, you see like stuff like Jurassic Park and Pokemon, Sonic. Like the 90s were really special. Like there's something in the water that just made very special characters and experiences that are still going strong today. But Donkey Kong just took this like 10-year hiatus I think the character will eventually like recover from it. It'll become like a gigantic thing again, but only time will tell, really. I have enjoyed just like how solid the Country Returns games are, them adding co-op into the formula, make them like, you know, it's hard to decide which ones are my favorite now, because Tropical Freeze and Country Returns are such good encapsulations of what a Donkey Kong game is, that you've got exploration, you've got atmosphere, you've got a flow to the way that you move. You know, I liken them a lot to Sonic games, and just how you can like blitz through the levels and really, you know, challenge yourself to do a little bit faster with a little bit more finesse next time you play it. And obviously they've had a much better experience with critical reception than the Sonic series has. So Donkey Kong has always been one of those very special games of the franchise, and I even like some of the wacky spin-offs. I think my favorite being the King of Swing on the Game Boy. It was the first time that we saw truly like sprite-based Donkey Kong outside of the original arcade game, because the pre-rendered graphics, they would take 3D models and then, you know, make sprites out of them. So they looked 3D, and it's like technically they were sprites, but they didn't look like sprites. And so I always enjoyed that, of the King of Swing game on the Game Boy. That just gave Donkey Kong a really different look. And it's been fun these last few years for you know, to hear that there's a new project in the works. Tropical Freeze was awesome, although it's been a long time since that came out. And then K. Rool being in Smash Brothers. K. Rool is he's not my favorite or best character in Ultimate, but he's the character I end up spending the most time with, because he's just, it's so fun. And it's like, man, sadly, I feel like if they make another Smash and they cut a bunch of characters, that he's probably getting cut. Because, or like if Sakurai is in charge of the game, he's probably getting cut. But like, it's been a lot of fun to see this resurgence of DK, even though, like Nintendo hasn't tweeted about it or anything. I think it's funny. I don't really feel like Nintendo needs to take anniversaries that seriously. I mean, you know, if they want to do something special with it, cool, but 9 times out of 10, they won't. And I mean, even with Mario, the 35th anniversary of Mario was probably like the first one that was like truly had some momentum behind it. And I think that was a lot of just like timing, where the Mario Kart reality game was ready, the Lego set was going to be ready, and all that stuff was like coming around the same time where it made sense to like bundle it all as the 35th anniversary thing. But I just don't really feel like they think about that, because we're seeing we're seeing nothing with Zelda, like, you know, and you would think that that would be another franchise that would be, that would get that sort of treatment. But I just don't think that there's anything happening, and I think it's fine. You know, they're working on the Donkey Kong projects quietly, and they'll be out when they're out, and no need to rush to meet an anniversary, because you don't want to end up like Sonic 06.
Yeah, I mean, I just get annoyed with Nintendo, because it seems like there's some anniversaries they care about celebrating. Like, I remember when it was Mario's, they made a big deal about it, and, you know, they're posting, like, Twitter things, and obviously they even made a whole, like, game release around that. And so that's why it just annoys the heck out of me, because they just seem to pick and choose when it's a big deal and when it's not. And honestly, you know, that's more of the stuff, you know, when I talked about before, would Nintendo be more successful if they appealed more to the West? That's another thing with Nintendo that I feel like Sony and Microsoft do so much better, is like acknowledging those things, because I think people like that, and it keeps those things relevant as well, or gives people a reason to talk about those things again. I just think Nintendo, you know, what harm does it do you to be like, hey, it's Donkey Kong's 40th anniversary, like, cool. Like, just like you've done for Mario with a bunch of games, like, because they've acknowledged a number of anniversaries in the past before, too, and I don't know. I just find it bizarre, because I just think it's a quick post, that's all you make about it, and it makes people happy, it gets people talking about one of your franchises, and then, you know, what bad comes out of that? Like, I don't know. That's why I just find it annoying, yeah, but
I just think it's, I mean, but that's where I say, like, I feel like they just had a bunch of Mario projects that were going to hit around the same time, as they're like, all right, let's make it into, bundle it into some, like, Mario anniversary celebration. But, like, for Zelda, you'd think the 35th anniversary of Zelda would be pretty special, too. But they're doing nothing. Like, nothing. You're getting a poo-poo Skyward Sword Wii U version port and a Game & Watch. And I feel like, honestly, my theory with the Game & Watch, go in whatever store you're near, go in and look for that Super Mario Bros. Game & Watch that was supposed to be kind of like decommissioned when the anniversary celebrations were over like 3 months ago, and you could see plenty of them. You can also see plenty of, I mean, you know, it's funny that limited release Mario game went back on sale on Amazon for like $45. A lot of people have extra stock of that. And so I feel like that's also why Nintendo doesn't lean heavy into the anniversary stuff. Cause it's like, you know, that stuff has a lot of hype up front, and then people just stop caring. And so I don't know, but yeah, I think you acknowledge anniversaries on Twitter posts. Like that's kind of what you do. It'll be interesting to see if Sakurai posts anything. Cause he's big on celebrating anniversaries of even stuff as obscure as like Mario RPG. But that's,
well, wouldn't he have already posted about it? Because they're, Japan's,
that's what I'm
going to
check. That's what I want to check, but I don't know what is up. Oh, okay. Found him. Does he acknowledge? No. Dang. That's funny. That would confirm my suspicion that like Sakurai does not care at all about, Donkey Kong, and just like does not like it as a series, because like even like he posted one for Samurai Showdown a couple days ago for Samurai Showdown.
Yeah, I mean, like, unless like the anniversary in Japan is different and that's what he's waiting to do, then yeah
I, well, because
he did it for Donkey Kong Country, the original one, but
it's 13 hours ahead in Japan, so it's, like, pretty much already the next day.
Well, that's why I said if it's not, if it didn't release today in Japan, like, the game, like, I don't know when its Japan release was.
Yeah, I think it's the same, but very interesting nonetheless. Maybe it's only game anniversaries and not, not that. Anyway, if you want to see some cool 40th anniversary DK stuff, Steve Mails, one of the guys behind Donkey Kong Country, posted a nice little picture that he drew. There's a lot of stuff happening on Twitter, but be pretty funny. Anyway, one of my favorite game franchises. It doesn't hurt my feelings that Nintendo doesn't seem to care.
It says that it came out in July 15th of 1983 in Japan.
Interesting. No, we'll see. We will see. I'm seeing conflicting sources on that, but we'll see. In any case, Donkey Kong, awesome game franchise. You've got, if you're a Switch Online member, jump into those SNES games. They're a little too hard for you. You can even do the rewind feature. It's a great way to experience the franchise, get your feet wet in it. Tropical Freeze is an absolute bop. Possibly the best 2D platformer of all time. Check it out, my guys. But that's going to bring us to the end of this episode of We the People. Any closing thoughts, Matthew?
Nope. None at all.
That's going to be the end of this episode. Join us next week as maybe something will happen in Nintendo life. I've got a rental for Skyward Sword coming in, so I'll give my impressions whenever that game comes in. I don't even know the release date. That's how little I care about that coming out. But we'll keep you posted. Thanks for tuning in. We'll see you next week for the next episode of We the People. Who does Skyward Sword come out?